Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Salad boy, money payments are hanging me from my feet, I tell you.
Gore Boys here. I'm your host, Ethan, the Dead Man. With me,
James the Spooky Miller.
That pause
James,
is spooky.
James, he's on push to talk Miller, because that's why I hesitated for a second.
No, I was waiting for you, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
To be fair, Jamie must be very used to you and me stepping over whenever he's trying to start a sentence, right?
That's true.
Yeah. In the Lore Boys traffic laws, you two always have the right of way.
Yes. Exactly.
Jamie, that's just because you're a motorboat, dude. I'm a beautiful schooner. Yeah. You're a motorboat. Peter's like a rinky-dink rowboat, you know?
It's totally illegal to interrupt Jamie on a red light. But I'm Peter Bones Donahue, whatever my Halloween name
is. Bo Donahue, because he's very pretty.
I know it's, aw, in French, though.
That's handsome in French.
Beauchamp.
Welcome to the internet's number one fake history podcast, where we take some of your favorite fictional worlds and dive into the nitty-gritty details you may have missed. If anyone wants to suggest an episode, I'm going to say this at the top, head to loreboys.com/about and click the link to Discord, or write us an email at contact@loreboys.com. We love to hear from you guys, and we look forward to it. This one was a recommendation for someone, or from someone, I guess also for someone, for that person for which it was from. I do not remember who that was. Somebody multiple times has requested we cover Lovecraft and some of the horribly spooky things written therein.
Tyler Hughes was the guy who did it. I'm on the page and I Googled it.
There we go. What
there
a man.
There you go.
What, JB, pull up the clip, would you?
Yeah, on the way.
Oh, shit. Speaking of Jamie pulling up clips, Joe Rogan Jamie has COVID.
Yeah.
He got it at a bar in Texas. Which sounds like they just give away COVID at a bar in Texas, honestly.
Who the hell is Joe Rogan Jamie?
That's where the expression comes from. It's his producer.
God damn it, I've been saying this thing, thinking it was an original Peter O'Donohue thing to say. Make me look like an asshole on the podcast.
It's one of the most famous fucking, other than like Joe Rogan versus Ro Jogan, where you just have him like having idiotic conversations with himself in different shirts. Jamie pull up the clip is just like a thing he says when he's stoned. He's just like, yo, fucking Carl Sagan, you ever see a gorilla? And then it's just like, Jamie, pull up the clip. And then they'll watch like a 40-second clip of a gorilla.
And then Jamie's just like really good at Googling things and also remembering past episodes. He's like, Jamie, what's that guy who talked about how wind works? And then he'll Google it and then tell you right away.
Okay, well, for everyone listening for the first time, I swear to God, we're going to talk about Lovecraft at one point, but I really want to dive in deep here. I've never seen an episode of Joe Rogan podcast. I've only seen, like you say, clips where he's arguing with himself, clips that are cut up with a lot of Alex Jones, and a lot of auto-tune Joe Rogan. But that's the only.
I still don't know how wind works.
Don't sweat it, dude. There's like molecules, you know, the sun pushes air and moves it around your face.
Is this the sun blowing air at us?
Solar winds, huh?
Oh, true.
There's a term we've all heard before. So
yeah. I saw Treasure Planet. That's in there. Oh,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the Gith Yankee or the Gith Zerai, who sail the astral sea.
Which we'll get into.
Not today, because that's a D&D thing. That's not a Lovecraft thing.
I can't tell. That sounded like there was apostrophes and no vowels. So
I think there are apostrophes in Gith Yankee and Gith Sarai, but I'm not positive about that fact, so don't quote me on it.
Yeah.
Okay, so note to self, don't ever say, Jamie, pull up the clip again, because it's not funny and unoriginal. Here I am stealing Joe Rogan's best bit on the show, for which I apologize.
Yeah, we shouldn't be punching down like that either, you know?
Yeah, we really throw him a bone every time we quote him and his Googling producer.
Okay. So as I said, today we're going to be taking a dive into the literary and dipping our spooky toe bones into the H.P. Lovecraft mythos. We're going to talk a lot of world building, since Lovecraft's characters tend to be a little stilted, a little... I mean, some of them are okay. Some of them are less than okay. I read a couple stories. I'd read At the Mountains of Madness before. And in preparation for this, I read Color Out of Time and Call of Cthulhu.
Cool.
They're good. There's certain aspects about Lovecraft's writing which I do like, and there's certain aspects about Lovecraft's writing which I don't like. But before we start, before we get into that, it's important for me to stress that Lovecraft himself was a greater monster than anything he may have written about. He was a classist, racist, xenophobic garbage person. His legacy is completely and utterly stained by the shit stain of a person he was. He was a white supremacist. His affinity for writing fictional monsters is often attributed to his demonizing of non-Anglo-Saxon people. We podcast boys are completely at odds with almost everything this man believed in, because he was objectively wrong about oh so many things. That said, some of the writing is pretty cool, and we know people requested it. A lot of people have kind of collectively agreed to enjoy his art without admiring the artist. So that's,
he's pretty much like the epitome of death of the author.
Yeah.
Also, who the fuck gets money? Is Lovecraft just public domain?
So, yeah, you could pretty much, anybody can write a Lovecraft story, because he never claimed the copyright when he was written, and this is something that we'll kind of get into in a bit, but there's a ton of authors who write Lovecraft horror in Lovecraft Lovecraft settings, and you can write a story about Cthulhu and get it published, because in the time that he was alive, he had a lot of correspondents that he would write letters to and write these stories to them, and they would write these stories back, and he never copyright claimed them. So then he kind of lost the copyright, because other people wrote these stories and published these stories. Well, I mean, to his credit, I guess, to credit the monster, he like didn't seem to care about the copyright. You know, he just cared about the fiction itself, and he was doing okay making a living as a writer as it is, so he didn't seem to care. That said, if anybody disagrees with anything I just said about him, please do not write us about your personal opinions on Lovecraft's politics. It's not a discussion I have anywhere near the energy to engage in, and I will just completely mute you and ignore you. Not even jokingly, not even anything. Just don't write me about Lovecraft's personal thing, unless you're just going to write me and be like, haha, yeah, the guy was a shit stain. I'll give you a react emote at best.
Did he fucking... I might just be like imagining this. Did he like marry his cousin or something like that?
Maybe you're thinking of Darwin? I don't know.
I think a lot of people married
him. I mean, they did. Darwin was exceptional, because he wrote about how it was so necessary to have diversity in your genetic pool, and he married his cousin. And honestly, one of the inspirations for it was like, hey, so many of my 13 children have like these weird genetic defects, and that kind of inspired some of his writing about genetics. So,
Call of Cthulhu is a game, and then the one I was trying to remember what was in my Steam library is Cthulhu Saves the World, where it's like a Dragon Quest 8-bit type thing where you play as Cthulhu and just like walk around and get in turn-based combat, which was really fun.
There are at least two Call of Cthulhu games, because I played Dark Corners of the Earth eons ago in like 2006 or something.
It's also a tabletop RPG, and I don't know which came first.
And it's one of his stories, correct?
Call of Cthulhu is, yeah. That's one of the ones that I read. Call of Cthulhu, cool. Color Out of Time, and At the Mountains of Madness. A lot of his writing is kind of funny, because so much of Eldritch horror, I guess for people who don't know what he wrote about these monsters from outer space and these great old gods, as he called them, and how just like horribly incomprehensible they were, because they were like extra dimensional beings, which might sound cliche, but he defined it basically. So, you know, not cliche in that regard. So much of his writing is like, and he saw a statue that was so horrible, he went mad, you know? So it's like, it leaves a lot to the reader to imagine what it looks like. Some of his monsters have more description than others. Some of them are more fleshed out than others. Some of them are completely created by other authors. So, go ahead.
This is the episode that if you would have heard what I said next, you would have laughed so hard.
Yeah, exactly. But then Ethan and Peter just cut him off, so we leave it as an exercise for the listener.
Well, we record this podcast with many other podcasters back and forth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Lovecraft himself didn't originally think of the idea of his short stories as one continuous universe. It was a contemporary and correspondent called August Derleth who invented the term.
Great fucking name.
August Derleth. He's the one who invented the term Cthulhu Mythos. And kind of from there, we have these kind of different circles of Lovecraft canon that all overlap and intersect in weird ways. So I'll post a handy diagram. Actually, I meant to pull this up for you guys, but I didn't.
I just want to comment on the name August Derleth again, because he sounds like a man who would show up in like an old-timey automobile and like buy a child from like a poor family to raise as an heir.
What's that you have there? Is that a bootblack? I'll take him, I will. I have 40 shillings.
I don't know why I think Carmen Sandiego when I hear that, but it's just like such a long name, you know?
Where in the world is August Derleth was, I think, the original name, but it was too hard to print.
Okay.
He was lured down a well by an unknowable creature.
Ooh, unknowable. That's scary. Unknowable.
So I've seen The Color Out of Space, which is a Nicolas Cage movie on Netflix right now.
Also a story. I don't know if... So The Color Out of Space was a Lovecraft story. There's another one which now I'm blanking on with something else out of space, which is not one of his stories, I believe. But okay. Anyway, so there's a handy diagram that I'll post on the page for this episode, loreboys.com. That kind of just shows you. So imagine like a Venn diagram with like 15 circles and all like overlapping at different areas. Some circles are completely within other circles, and some of them kind of just intersect and. And that's kind of like where you get all these different canons. We're just probably going to be talking about one of them, mainly just Lovecraft's creations. I'll get into some of the details on you know, or some of the details I will say, and I may not specify, might be created by other authors. I try not to delve too deep into who wrote what, because that wasn't interesting for me to research, so I figured it wouldn't be interesting for you, the listeners, to hear about.
Is the Olympic sign like the... Is that a Venn diagram?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. What kind of, what are they trying to show in that, I wonder?
I bet you each of the rings in the Olympic logo stands for something.
They represent the continents.
Could be. Wait. Whoa. Isn't there seven?
Yeah, whoa. There's no athletes from Antarctica.
So
the only time.
Oh. How many rings are in the... Because I thought there was only five rings
there's
in the.
Five.
I think there's logo. Five, but you've got. I think the Americas are all one thing. There's two of the attached continents, I believe, are the same thing. Because, like Europe and Asia might be one ring.
Dude,
I don't think Australia gets its own.
That Venn diagram has not even been accurate since Pangaea.
Yeah. Well, that's when they started the Olympics.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if it's Oceania that's getting shafted or if it's South America that's getting shafted here. But somebody's getting shafted by the Olympic logo. You know,
I would assume it's Oceania.
That's a newer one, because I remember in school that was like Oceania, like where it wasn't always one, but this is one now.
Oh, I thought they just called the continent Australia, because I remember when they started calling it Oceania around like when we were in grade 8 or something.
Yeah.
And I feel like they was just like, oh, it was Australia, and now they're calling it Australasia or Oceania. But maybe
is Australia still a planet, or have they reinstated that, or is that still out?
You know, in the time it takes Earth to go around the sun once, Australia only moves like 1/100th of that distance. So.
Yeah, it takes Australia 248 years to go around the sun.
cool. I remember the other Lovecraft story, which wasn't about or wasn't written by Lovecraft. It was The Shadow Out of Time. Anyway. So just a quick cursory glance at the timeline of the entire mythos. It's pretty wide. It starts in 600 million BC, and the latest entry is in 18 million years in the future, so 18 million 2000-ish.
Okay.
So yeah, a lot of ground to cover. Obviously, we're not going to get into all of that today.
Sit the fuck down, audience. You're gonna be here for a while.
The fun fact for the listeners about those two dates is they both come from the same story. So 600 million years ago and 18 million years in the future both come from The Shadow Out of Time.
Cool.
Yeah,
makes sense.
Basically, an alien race arrives on Earth 16 million years ago, and then things happen way in the distant future when a man wakes up there. Okay, Jamie and Peter, Let's say Peter first or Jamie first. You guys flip a coin. What do you two know about H.P. Lovecraft's creations?
They're unknowable.
So we know Cthulhu.
There's a lot of tentacles.
A lot of tentacles. We're going to talk about one that has a lot of tentacles. I said one to you guys earlier today. Do you remember what I said?
Nope. I wasn't listening to you.
I know a lot of them
I'm more familiar with. Like Shadow over Innsmouth is like sea monsters, but I think that's Dagon, and he turns people into like fish people. I know that some of them can mutate humans. A lot of them are ocean based because he, like, not only did he think immigrants were scary, but also the ocean scared the shit out of him. So a lot of his monsters are at the bottom of the ocean. Mm-hmm. I know the game Call of Cthulhu, which I never managed to beat because it was too buggy and I couldn't find saves past the point. Ends in like a temple full of fish people at the bottom of the ocean.
So that's where Cthulhu is like known to be sleeping and dreaming and lives in an underwater city called Rile.
And Dagon is like this other sea monster thing, which is apparently in that game. But I remember when I played it, it was so bugged he never appeared on screen. So I had to download somebody's save from past that point. And there's like, I think there's like Fatagan or something, which is like a big mass of eyes and meat in outer space or whatever. But a lot of them are like twisted tentacle monsters or straight up sea monsters. And they're all kind of.
Yeah. And if you ever saw their like true form, like your mind couldn't even comprehend it. And it'd be so horrifying that you'd be driven mad immediately kind of thing. So it's like, it's like a cube with five dimensions or something like that. You just don't know how to take it in.
A tesseract, if you will. So that's a convenient writing tool as well, because so many authors write in the Lovecraft mythos. You could write a Lovecraft, like a story about an eldritch horror Cthulhu, and describe him however you wanted and just say like, oh no, you know, people weren't comprehending him like the same way because it's inferred by the reader, you know.
How
he looks. So
you just don't get it, mom.
So you guys score 0 points for that round. Ooh, we'll try and do better on the next round. You guys got plenty of time to regain ground, don't worry. The Smith family is in the booth though, so we're gonna go to them and find out what they answered. Lovecraft's writings, they lean heavily on the theme that mankind is irrelevant. Most of these creatures that he writes about don't care directly about humans. They're just doing their stuff and humans happen to be there kind of thing. It's kind of like this idea that they're such powerful beings that we are as ants to them. So why would they consider us, you know?
Right. Okay.
You don't think about what ants are doing in your day-to-day life unless, like me, you lived
in an
apartment. Yeah, that had an ant infestation, and they were just always on your mind.
Dude, I haven't had ants in so long. What a blessing. I haven't even had to think about them.
Winter's coming, my friend. They come out in the winter.
It's true. It's true.
You got to start preparing. When it gets cold.
Okay, so enough talk about ants, Jamie. Keep them in your pants, please. Lovecraft references beings called Great Old Ones and beings he calls the Outer Gods. There's some similarities between them. The scope of them varies differently. The Great Old Ones are a group of unique, malignant beings of great power. They reside in various locations on Earth and once presided over the planets as gods and rulers. Cthulhu is considered a Great Old One. We are to Cthulhu as ants. The Outer Gods are cosmically significant entities that are located beyond the confines of Earth and the solar system, exerting their influence from deep space. The gap between humans and Great Old Ones is ant to human, and the gap between Great Old Ones and Outer Gods is described as greater than that gap. Like,
okay,
the Outer Gods are so much more like powerful and significant than the Great Old Ones. They recognize less. Basically, then the Great Old Ones would recognize us.
So Cthulhu can lift 8 times less of his body weight than I can.
No, Cthulhu can lift 8 times more, but a Great Old One could lift 16 times more than Cthulhu, even.
We're the ants, dude. You got it all backwards. The ants can lift 8 times their body weight. We can't.
Oh,
so we're the ants. He can lift 8 times
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Then, yeah.
Cthulhu, Cthulhu and David Attenborough just sitting in the jungle watching tiny people chew through leaves, talking about how fucking mesmerizing it is.
And now we go to the Goatwood. the Goatwood Rainforest, where we find these tiny humans off on their coast. Devious plans. Oh, look at this one. He just got fired from his job and he thinks his life is over. Little does he know, it must go on.
David Attenborough always starts with just like a one word title of whatever you're looking at. It would just like for Cthulhu, it would just be like Boston or something. Zooms in over where it is.
So now for most of these all powerful deities, with a few exceptions, they exist outside of normal space time. We're talking about the outer gods here. We're not going to talk about great old ones pretty much at all this episode until we get to the end.
They're kind of like dark energy itself. They're just like this immaterial kind of scientific concept, but as if it were a god, right? Like you can't understand gravity. It just exists.
Yeah. Sort of thing,
right?
Pretty much. Okay. We'll get into it.
I don't mean to sound like an idiot there. You can't understand gravity. It just exists.
Yeah. Sure, dude.
Two things unexplained by science. Gravity, outer gods.
Jogan, pull up the clip.
Yeah. So some of these outer gods in the canon are known by humans. The outer gods themselves are generally imprisoned or restricted from interacting directly with most people. We'll get into at least one exception until the unfortunate protagonist unknowingly exposes themselves to an eldritch horror. You know, you ever just like getting changed with your curtain open, and then you like turn towards the window and you see just like an outer god, just like in his like the Jehovah's Witness outfit standing on your lawn, kind of like peeking in the window, like, oh god.
It's just like a Jehovah's outfit, but filled with 1,000 screaming beans of light.
So let's start talking Eldritch Horrors, and why not start at the top? So I have a quote for you guys from H.P. Lovecraft in The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath. Outside the ordered universe is that amorphous blight of nethermost confusion which blasphemes and bubbles at the center of all infinity. The boundless daemon sultan Azathoth, whose name no lips dare speak aloud and who gnaws hungrily in inconceivable unlighted chambers beyond time and space amidst the muffled, maddening beating of vile drums and the thin, monotonous whine of accursed flutes. So the first of the outer gods, great first of his name, Azathoth. He was the first one in the canon, the first created. He's at the top of the family tree, and there is a family tree that Lovecraft drew, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but he is technically at the top of it, so he comes first.
I wouldn't have picked a flute for a scary instrument, personally.
Not a flute. An accursed flute.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. Like, it's just like not scary. Yeah, it's not scary.
A little Willy Wonka one.
Oh, pan flute.
Yeah.
So Azathoth, sometimes called the Nuclear Chaos, the Daemon Sultan, the Deep Dark, the Cold One, and my personal favorite, the Blind Idiot God, is an outer god, as I'd mentioned.
Crack open a cold one with the lore boys and lose your fucking mind.
Yeah. crack open a cold one with the Blind Idiot Gods of Podcasting, the lore boys.
Yeah. I was thinking, what was the story that quote was from?
The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath.
Yeah, Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath sounds like a guilty pleasure, like hair metal band.
So
you would listen to it on Spotify, but
they have accursed flutes. They're wonderful.
In researching this, there's more than a few metal bands that take their names directly from some of the things, like some of the either epithets or the actual names of these beings.
Oh my god!
Yeah, you can't stop them from doing it. They'll just keep doing it.
So the first recorded mention of Azathoth was in a note Lovecraft wrote to himself in 1919 that read simply Azathoth, all caps, hideous name. And that was it. So that was the first recorded mention of the name.
So I know we said that, like, we obviously disavow pretty much everything he ever did. I do that shit all the time. I have random fucking creative notes all over the place. It's like...
my phone's so full of notes that I wrote and then never opened again.
I was looking through my phone notes, and I had one idea that I don't remember writing down at all, but an animation of a chess play, but there's no pieces and only show the attacking of either sides in red and blue, and like a time lapse of just like the attacking pieces. I have no idea why that was a good idea. Or if
you want to make an experimental film about chess?
Yeah. I think I was watching a Bobby Fischer documentary and had a little bit too much wine or something.
We'll create a Patreon reward that just gives you access to our notes uncensored or something.
I have like actual thousands of pages of doodles that my mom still has doodles from when I was in elementary school, and just that carried on. Like, I never throw away anything. I have all of the concept art that I've ever done for the Lore Boys.
I have a couple of our first script stuff into my chair over there, I think.
On paper. Used to work on paper.
Yeah.
Yeah. All mine's digital, so I do still have it as well, just on the Google Drive.
You gotta keep it in your chair, dude.
Yeah.
In case the internet goes down.
Okay. Give you the password to our Google Drive.
But what if you have ants in your pants and you sit in the chair and they crawl out of your pants and eat the paper?
Paper's not paper.
Paper doesn't weigh more than 8 times an ant. So maybe they just pick it up and carry it away, you know?
Oh my god. What if did the ants steal the Lore Boys IP? Like what's going on, dude?
I've never considered ants before. So I don't know. Okay, speaking of ants, the Outer Gods are, generally speaking, like I'd said, located beyond the confines of Earth and the solar system. Though there are some outer gods who have taken up residence on Earth, Azathoth is not one of the ones that lives on Earth.
Okay.
For being as all-encompassing as the blind idiot god, there's not much to go on for a physical description. Every contributor to the mythos envisions him differently, and he is always changing. There is some evidence, though, that the physical manifestation of Azathoth in the universe is continuous, with a spot in the central region of the galaxy, Sagittarius A star, the supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way galaxy. So,
he must be notorious, though, because his initials for blind idiot god is B-I-G.
Oh.
At least big.
The notorious blind idiot god might be a good name for the episode.
We already have, I think that's a joke for one of our past episodes.
it's from Hollow Knight. It's the notorious BUG.
Oh, BUG.
Yeah.
You know what? Who says you can't dust off an old classic, huh?
Yeah, man.
Right.
I'm going to rip myself off.
I've been doing it to Joe Rogan for months now, so why not myself? okay. So he lives, SpongeBob, the elder god, lives in a pineapple under the sea. Azathoth lives in a black hole at the center of the Milky Way galaxy.
Right.
Are you ready, kids? Azathoth.
And then it's just the hissing of wind in response. And he's like, I can't hear you.
Discordant flutes. Yeah. Yeah. It's the memes where it's like 20th Century Fox on recorder or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the sound of Azathoth approaching.
Well, that's because the final part of the SpongeBob theme, he plays the little flute on his nose, but it's just like the screaming horrible flutes.
So Azathoth in the stories is often referenced inside of another book, the Necronomicon. I'm going to assume you guys have heard of the Necronomicon. I'll assume Peter's heard of it. I'm not sure Jamie's heard of it.
Guys, just so you know, the flutes, like back especially in 1919, they'd be using tritones, which is 6 semitones up, and it's like the scariest interval, and that's what they all thought back then. So,
do you know about the Necronomicon?
I know nothing about it, dude. I know that it's a spooky ghost book that has all the evil stuffs in it.
Pretty much. So, like Lovecraft never had a copyright to any of his work. He coined the term Necronomicon. He's the guy who invented it, and he invented it for his stories. But it's been used, 1,000 times since then in a bunch of other stories. The Evil Dead uses it. It's kind of used all over the place.
League of Legends uses it for a spell power build. I'm pretty sure
it's that's the Morellonomicon, which is a reference to the Necronomicon, and Tom Morello, one of the creators of League.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, that is your random League of Legends fact for the day.
There's your animal fact for the episode, I guess.
Tom Morello is a fucking animal. I take that. I know Riot Games is problematic. I know nothing about Tom Morello himself.
Yeah, me neither.
So the Necronomicon, or Kitab al-Azif, is a book first appearing in Lovecraft's story, The Hound. Its title translates, the Arabic title Kitab al-Azif, and this is a Google Translate, translates to The Book of the Blind. From what I've read, it may be more poetically translated as Book of the Approacher, which I think is more on brand for Eldritch horrors kind of interfering with Earth from like great distances in space, right?
I thought it, like, Book of the Blind did kind of work with Blind Idiot God, so I was like, oh, that's a good job for Google. They translated that decently.
Yeah, so, I mean, Arabic is very much not a Roman or Latin romance language, so I'm sure most of the translations are, you know, very poetic and intended instead of literal. So, in the Necronomicon, Azathoth is referenced as a significant malign presence. The characters Albert Wilmarth in The Whisperer in the Dark, The Whisperer in Darkness, and Walter Gilman in The Dreams in the Witch House are both horrified at the mere mention of its name when they read it. So this is kind of that Lovecraft shtick that I referenced before. Like, I read a name, I'm spooked out because it's actually a presence in the center of the galaxy that can, you know, influence people's pathos from great distances.
Okay.
Gilman wakes from another dream, remembering, quote, the thin, monotonous piping of an unseen flute. So there's your flutes again, Jamie. He decides that he had picked up that last conception from what he had read in the Necronomicon about the mindless entity Azathoth, which rules all time and space from a curiously environed black throne at the center of chaos.
Dude, World of Warcraft stole Azanoth from that. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, for
sure.
There's
like the war glades of Azanoth, and it's like a demon and stuff, but yeah.
So, I mean, the old gods are all homages to Lovecraft's writing. Like, Yogg-Saron, we'll talk about his counterpart, Yogg-Sothoth, which is an actual Lovecraft creation.
C'Thun, that's an obvious one.
Yeah.
Exactly. C'Thun and Cthulhu. Gilman later fears finding himself in the spiral black vortices of that ultimate void of chaos wherein reigns the mindless daemon sultan Azathoth. So here's a quote for you guys from The Haunter of the Dark. Ancient legends of ultimate chaos, at whose center sprawls the blind idiot god Azathoth, lord of all things, encircled by his flopping horde of mindless and amorphous dancers, and lulled by the thin monotonous piping of a demoniac flute held in nameless pause. Not pause as in stopping, but pause as in like a dog's pause. Or something else's pause. I don't know. Maybe something less cute than a dog.
Bunch of little Labrador puppies.
Labrador sure puppies, but they're mindless and amorphous and they're dancing.
Oh, that's cute.
So we don't know much about him. We know he's got a harem, I guess, of like gray worms just like flopping all about him in the center of the black hole at the center of the galaxy at all times.
Yeah.
Which sounds kind of cool. Sounds like a chill god, you know?
He seems like kind of a bastardized version. Excuse me.
I'd love to call someone that one day.
You bastardized virgin.
He seems like a bastardized version of something that would have been from like a 1001 Nights or whatever, like an Arabian Nights thing, because he's referred to as the Sultan as well. And if he's got like music playing, he's got like a throne, some sort of worms, corrupted desert king.
Yeah, so I've never read 1001 Nights. I'm not super familiar with it, but I don't know at what point it's like, is it racist what he wrote because he, you know, didn't like Arabic people, so he wrote like all these evil things in their language because the Necronomicon was written by a character he coined, the Mad Arab, which in itself isn't racist, but given the context of who Lovecraft was, it most likely was racist. So I don't know if like calling him the Demon Sultan is kind of connecting his personal politics to the story yet. I didn't go into any of that because I didn't want to touch on it too much.
Yeah, we're not doing a biography of Lovecraft, right? We're talking about his stuff. Yeah,
exactly. So among Azathoth's many followers, the worshippers in the town of Goatswood that practice obscene rites that involve, quote, atrocities practiced on still living victims in Azathoth's conical temples are insects that have fled the destruction of their home planet of Shagai, bringing the temple across the universe with them. So in some of the stories, or at least one of the stories, there's a cult to Azathoth in the town of Goatswood. Like I said, some people do know about these outer gods, and they're typically cultists that are trying to use their power for their own purposes on Earth. There are also these horrible insect worm-like things that come from the planet of Shagai that have fled across the universe, the destruction of their home planet, and set up shop here on Earth.
Okay. Is that where the cult worships? So they like they were just like, hey guys, we're out of space gas. Can we just like park it here in Goatswood and then you guys can worship us sort of thing? Is that...
Yeah, so more or less. So, I mean, I, without having read the story myself, I kind of picture it, you know, humans find these horrible insect-like creatures and they have a way of communicating to some extent that there's this being Azathoth that they can summon through various means. These beings, the insects of Shigai, worship Azathoth. So presumably he's like, yeah, I'll make sure your dry cleaning gets done and your wife suffers for sleeping with your neighbor. But you have to let my insect friends crash at your place for a couple weeks, you know?
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
Favor for a favor, bro.
Yeah, that's pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I just molt on your couch quickly and then like stay inside while my fresh shell hardens? I can't be exposed to the sun while that's doing that. Like, yeah, whatever.
Can you seal the door? Just like too much air also dries me out. Oh, God. God damn it. The insects of the guy put their goddamn shells in the dishwasher again. So sick of those guys. They never do their dishes.
By hand.
Yeah. They use all the spoons, and they just never wash them, dude. And they're, like, so crusted by the time they put them in the sink. That's a shout-out to anybody who's ever had a bad roommate, I suppose. Jamie, shouting you out, buddy.
Well, I wasn't a bad roommate to Ethan. We've never lived together in that context, but I've had horrible roommates.
Yeah, I said to anyone who has had a bad roommate.
I have not had a roommate for 5 years, because they molted on all my spoons.
Yeah.
They don't molt on the spoons, but they use the spoons to pry off the hardened dead skin, right?
Dude, yeah. I saw a thing of a lizard getting his like scale thingies removed from his nostril holes after molting or whatever, and it looks so satisfying.
It just
came out like perfect. Yeah,
good for him.
Imagine not being able to breathe and then just getting the scales out your nose. Like,
As someone with allergies, I can kind of relate. So from Azathoth comes three other outer gods. Nyarlathotep, the one I referenced earlier that you guys forgot about. The Nameless Mist, and the artist formerly known as Darkness. No, it's just Darkness, but...
I like the idea of the Nameless Mist. It's just like, well, what do you call that one? It's Mist. Who cares?
Yeah. No, it's got a name. Its name is just the Nameless Mist.
The Nameless Mist, but it's like, I don't know, manifest as something cool, idiot.
So it does kind of manifest sometimes as the picture that was on the Lovecraft wiki for it was like an ant, actually, weirdly enough, but like a 2D rendering of an ant with like, I don't know, all these extra appendages. I don't know. Definitely a mist. Definitely not mist-shaped some of the times.
Okay. I was going to say it's actual just mist. Knowing how where wind come from would be really important for that thing. Yeah. It's probably the worst enemy.
Yeah.
It uses solar wind to travel across the galaxy. So, like I said before, Lovecraft himself designed a family tree for his creations. It's pretty largely considered tongue-in-cheek. It was in a letter written to a colleague, James F. Morton, and has Azathoth at the top with the three I just mentioned right under him. Later writing by Lynn Carter, also the creators of the Call of Cthulhu RPG, unifies the Nameless Mist and its brother, the Unnamed Dark, into one being. So in the Call of Cthulhu RPG, the Nameless Mist and the Darkness are kind of one entity. In Lovecraft's original drawing, he had them as two points, but kind of like weirdly connected, where they're like brother and sister, or like brother and brother, and they produce offspring in a weird way.
Is it just called the Dark Mist now or something like that?
I'm not sure what it's called in the Call of Cthulhu RPG, because that's outside the Lovecraft mythos, so kind of outside the scale of what I was researching specifically.
The mistness.
So we'll start with the oldest brother, I guess. The Darkness. The Darkness, also known as Magnum Tenebrosum, which I looked up the Latin. You guys want to take a stab at what it means?
Biggest something, I don't know.
Close.
Wait, say it again. Magnum.
Magnum Tenebrosum.
It is, I don't know, but it's something really Chad, because Magnum, dude.
So Magnum means big.
Yeah, okay, big.
It's literally big dark. We're talking about the big dark here, boys.
Yeah, dude. Quarantine's been going on so long, I'm starting to feel the big dark come on, you know, boys?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Big sad.
The darkness, or the unnamed darkness, or the big dark, is another outer god and the progenitor of Shub-Niggurath, I thought might have been one of the creatures that you would have recognized.
I have heard that before, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It was like when I was reading, I was like, oh yeah, that's one that I've for sure heard of before. Know nothing about them, but I've heard the name, kind of thing.
Maybe it's a skeleton lizard. I don't fucking know.
The Nameless Mist is also an outer god, of course. Empowered with omnipresence, reality warping, acausality, which I didn't even look up what that does, but, you know. Space-time
makes
manipulation.
Things happen, maybe?
No, acausality.
Well, it, I don't know. Like, if you squeeze the toothpaste out the toothpaste tube, you can't put it back in, because that's like everything goes in one way. Acausality sounds like you could put the toothpaste back in, or it could be outside all along, or it never had to be in the first place. Or
so I was gonna Google it.
Let me pull up the clip myself. Yeah.
Wait, yeah, before you do it, because I had it about to be Googled, but I guess you've already looked at it. So I was gonna say more or less what Jamie said, where like acausality would be the ability to undo something, right, kind of at will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't clicked on any of the links here, but the main thing I've got is the acausality in non-local gravity theory.
Okay.
That just confused me more.
acausality is having no cause. So I guess they could create effect without cause.
Okay.
But I think if we're going to get really into the nitty-gritty semantics, they would be the cause at that point, but, you know.
I think it's just like you could do anything, and it's basically like writer's ability to just say, yeah, he did that, and then he undid it, and the time was forward and it was backwards. It doesn't matter. You know?
Well, anything they could do, I can do better. yep. So acausality, space-time manipulation, immortality, and incorporeality, which for the Nameless Mist, incorporeality kind of makes sense, right?
Okay, so it is definitely like a matter-manipulating kind of ghost force, I guess. So it
seems like, yeah.
Makes sense, yeah.
They're not super fleshed out in any of the books, because like I'd said, that's kind of the shtick with a lot of these short stories, is like the fact that they're unknown is what's supposed to make them unsettling and horrifying. So from these two entities will come the maybe more familiar names, Shub-Niggurath, who I mentioned, and Yogg-Sothoth, who you might also recognize. The comparison to World of Warcraft, Jamie, would be Yogg-Saron.
Sorry, I didn't catch you tossing that to me. Yogg-Saron, yeah. That's an old god.
Exactly. We'll get to them eventually. Let's talk about Nyarlathotep for now. Known to many, by his epithet, the Crawling Chaos, he's the third of the elder children of Azathoth. He's also known by 44 other titles. So the guy's
good
got
god.
Guy's got a lot of nicknames, okay? The God of a Thousand Forms, the Black Wind, the Crawling Mist, the Dark One, the Father of All Bats, Face Eater, you guys really laughed at Face Eater right before the one
the Father of All Bats.
Okay.
Yeah, well, every single one.
You guys really laughed at the Father of All Bats two before the one I really thought you guys would laugh at, Mr. Tiddles. The Howler in the Dark. The White Man. I mean, very spooky. Stalker Among the Stars, and a few dozen others.
Oh my god, that's so fucking funny. They used to call him Dick, which was a nickname for the Nyarlathotep back in the 20s. Don't really say that anymore.
Yeah.
Father of all bats.
I don't know much about him. All I know is he fucks a lot of female bats, okay?
Yeah. Dude's got a pocket full of fruit or something.
So in Edward M. Erdelak's Merkaba Rider series of books, Nyarlathotep is revealed to be another incarnation of the Dark Lord Sauron from J.R.R. Tolkien's Middle-earth mythology. In the works of Stephen King, particularly the Dark Tower series, Nyarlathotep is one of many identities adopted by the villainous Randall Flagg.
Mist is another Stephen King thing, too. He's bored a lot, I feel like.
I own... there's a modern publication by Arkham House of the Necronomicon, which is just a compilation of his short stories. And it's like a beautiful, like, faux leather bound book with like this gold filigree. And the only thing written on the back is a quote from Stephen King. That's basically like, oh, he, you know, he started the fascination for me, and I hope he will for so many others, kind of thing.
Cool.
All to say,
the Myst deals with alternate dimensions as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and I mean, it's like, it's basically like Eldritch horrors coming out of the Myst and killing people. Yeah. Right. So all to say, Nyarlathotep is kind of one of the more utilized of his creatures because he's one of the most human of his creation. So one of the most relatable and understandable. So he kind of just like fits into a lot of other fiction very easily.
Okay. Yeah. When there's... writers need to explain where all these fucking bats came from, they just toss in Nyarlathotep because he's public domain.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Nyarlathotep differs from other deities in the mythos in a number of ways. Most of the outer gods are exiled to the stars, like Yog-Sothoth and Azathoth. Most of the great old ones are sleeping and dreaming, like Cthulhu. Nyarlathotep, on the other hand, is active and frequently walks the earth in the guise of a human being, usually a tall, slim, joyous man, though he has thousands of other forms which are pretty traditionally sanity flaying. That's kind of where the all these different nicknames come from, is because anybody could be Nyarlathotep. Be Nyarlathotep.
It's Slenderman.
It's the Slender Man.
I like the fact that he just shapeshifts into different kind of boring dudes until he gets a new nickname and then is tires of it and then changes into something else.
Yeah, yeah. Guys, stop calling me Mr. Tittles. Come on. Come on. Guys, I didn't have sex with that bat.
Kindergarten child.
Guys, I didn't have sex with all those lady bats, okay? Come on. Come on. Sure, they were cute, but like they wouldn't even give me their number. You guys are so mean.
Crack a great cold one and then harass him about all his alimony payments he has to make for bats.
Guys, if you don't stop, I'm totally going to break your psyche and drive you into a full mental breakdown, okay? Come on.
His alimony payments are hanging me from my feet, I tell you.
You know how much fucking money I got to pay in cranberries every month, okay? I'm keeping that son of a bitch in Stardew Valley afloat. So while many of the other outer gods have cults serving them, Nyarlathotep seems to help out with his ability to walk the earth so casually. He's often at the churches of his siblings and nibblings, serving in their stead. So he doesn't necessarily have cults devoted to him as much as he'll show up at the cult of Azathoth and be like, oh yeah, the bug things, they're from a planet called Shagai. They want to worship their god Azathoth, who lives at the center of the galaxy.
What's a nibbling?
It's a gender neutral niece or nephew.
What? Oh. I'm going to use that from now on. That's way better than
that's
sibling.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
It does sound like a baby animal. But now I'm just thinking of Nyarlathotep as just like when he manifests in Vegas, he's like, look at me, it's the real Elvis and whatever.
he manifested as Charlie Chaplin and got third place in a Charlie Chaplin lookalike contest.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So Nyarlathotep can use human languages, something the other outer gods traditionally cannot do. The other gods tend to be all powerful, but without any kind of mortal or comprehensible intent. Nyarlathotep, on the other hand, seems particularly adept and focused on manipulating humans. So where Cthulhu is like, he lays dreaming in Rileh, the city under the sea, and people kind of, the cultists worshipping him, give him these intentions. Cthulhu doesn't necessarily have those intentions, you know. They're just dreaming what they're dreaming, and, you know, shit happens, like I said earlier.
Okay.
Nyarlathotep seems pretty intent on fucking some people up. He seems to just enjoy it.
Okay.
Deliberately deceitful, has used things as mundane as propaganda to achieve his goals. So, you know. Nyarlathotep enacts the will of the outer gods, is their messenger, heart, and soul. He is, quote, the immemorial figure of the deputy or messenger of hidden and terrible powers. He's also...
So he can understand both people and the outer gods.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like an interpreter, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
The third of Azathoth's children, he gets what dad's, you know, driving at. He knows how to work the parents because he's the youngest child, so, you know. He was born like he was like very much a mistake baby, let's say. So like the parents were already like retired and they like got rid of the stress of work by the time they raised him, so he like kind of has like a good relationship with them.
Okay, good. Right. Yeah.
The great accident, yeah.
One of his many nicknames.
Well, yeah, exactly. The great mistake. So Nyarlathotep enacts the will of the outer gods. He's also the servant of Azathoth, whose fitful spastic wishes he immediately fulfills, or usually immediately. So he gets phone calls from dad in the middle of the night. Like, no, you gotta understand. You gotta tell your human friends to let my bug friends move in with them. Okay, dad, sure. I'll tell them. No problem.
Yeah.
They can't really communicate.
That sounds like a shitty job, because like you said, he's an interpreter, so he's just trying to balance it back and forth all the time. Yeah. That's not where you
the great subtitler, where he just kind of like does that for all the insect people videos. He does their closed captions for them.
Yeah, he's got a great localization job.
Yeah. He works with the government. It's nice.
Yeah.
So to Nyarlathotep, spreading madness is more important and enjoyable than death and destruction. A lot of the other gods really love the, we're just going to blow shit up. He's like, no. I want to fuck them up so bad that they blow themselves up.
You could probably get a lot more enjoyment out of that. That's like an investment cosmic prank to drive people crazy. Because if you just blow up a city or whatever, then those people is all dead. Then you're out of playthings, right?
Dude, the supercomputer from last episode figured that out. Like, after a while, like, you destroy enough, you got to keep a few just to mess with them, right?
Nyarlathotep ain't got shit on Am, you're right.
Yeah.
So I have another quote for you guys. And it was then that Nyarlathotep came out of Egypt. Who he was, none could tell, but he was of the old native blood and looked like a pharaoh. The Fellahin knelt when they saw him, yet could not say why. He said he had risen up out of the blackness of 27 centuries, and that he had heard messages from places not on this planet. Into the lands of civilization came Nyarlathotep, swarthy, slender, and sinister, always buying strange instruments of glass and metal and combining them into instruments yet stranger. He spoke much of the sciences, of electricity and psychology, and gave exhibitions of power which sent his spectators away speechless, yet which swelled his fame to exceeding magnitude. Men advised one another to see Nyarlathotep and shuddered, and where Nyarlathotep went, rest vanished, for the small hours were rent with the screams of a nightmare.
That's cool.
That's from Lovecraft's eponymous poem, Nyarlathotep.
How far along was psychology back then? Did they know electricity like was happening in the brain back then? That's pretty fucking cool. Because it's talking about psychology and electricity for like mind manipulation or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if it was just electricity was novel at the time. So like he just spoke of the science of electricity. Right. Like I don't know if it was electricity and psychology together or the sciences electricity and psychology, but I love the idea that he did. I don't know how far psychology was along at the time. You're the psychology major, so why don't you tell me?
Dude, I haven't been to school in 5 years. But I bet you, what I did learn is what he was making out of all those plastics and metals was bongs. That's what I learned.
Oh, yeah. That Nile weed hit different, though, and he's just ripping a fat one.
It truly is the bounty of Egypt, dude. So according to Lovecraft himself, Nyarlathotep would go on to impregnate a real Roman noblewoman named Viburnia. Again, a real Roman woman.
She's plucked from history. She's not made up.
She's plucked from history, and here's the how and why. She's purported to be the actual ancestor of Lovecraft. So Lovecraft traced back his lineage to ancient Rome and found this woman named Viburnia and said Nyarlathotep impregnated her then. So in Lovecraft's fictional worlds, he's a descendant of the crawling chaos. Worth noting, many of Lovecraft's stories are told from the first person. Every single one I've read is told from the first person. I don't know if he wrote any that aren't first person narrated.
Yeah. They're all FPS books.
So with the family lineage established, let's go down the tree between the spawn of the Nameless Mist and the Darkness. I don't talk about the Nameless Mist and the Darkness so much because there's really not a lot on them. They exist in outer space. They're kind of referenced, but not much is known about them. So we're going to talk about Yog-Sothoth and we're going to talk about Shub-Niggurath. Which would you guys like to talk about first?
What about the WoW one? Yog-Sothoth.
Yog-Sothoth. Okay.
Yeah, my tongue just fell out of my head.
Honestly, these are not normal words or names.
Yeah, I was writing this script and I was so worried that I was just going to be tripping over every second word, but I'm pretty proud of how it went so far. So
it feels like you're having an allergic reaction when you're trying to pronounce it. Thanks.
What's in this? Eldritch Horror? I'm allergic to Eldritch Horror. So I got another quote for you guys. Yog-Sothoth knows the gate. Yog-Sothoth is the gate. Yog-Sothoth is the key and guardian of the gate. Past, present, future, all are one in Yog-Sothoth. He knows where the old ones broke through of old and where they shall break through again. He knows where they have trod earth's fields and where they still tread them, and why no one can behold them as they tread. That is from the Dunwich Horror, or the Dunwich Horror.
I thought it was Dunwich.
So it's spelled Dunwich. Dunwich is a real town in Scotland, pronounced Dunwich.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's set in a town in New England, so it may have been pronounced Dunwich. Lovecraft himself never specified which way it was supposed to be pronounced.
Okay, yeah, because the only time I've ever heard it spoken out loud is there is a quest in Fallout 3 in the Dunwich building where you do find an evil book that is turning people into ghouls. So there is just a spooky, it's a hidden quest. There's no like title, but it's a hidden quest called the Dunwich Horror. And in the fucking expansion and Point Lookout, there's like this weird dude who wants you to go get the book there. And that's the only time it's spoken out loud. So I thought it was like a hard CH instead of the...
Yeah, it'd be like a short form for a smoked meat sandwich too.
What?
Because they're all guests.
Dunwich, done sandwich.
Oh, done.
He's talking very specifically about a Montreal baker or a Montreal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought about it before saying it, but I just couldn't stop my tongue.
So Yog-Sothoth is a cosmic entity and outer god. Again, we're still in the outer gods here. Born of the Nameless Mist, he is the progenitor of Cthulhu, Haster the Unspeakable, and the ancestor of the Vurmi. We won't really get into any of those today, anyway. Like many Lovecraftian gods, Yog-Sothoth has many different appearances throughout the various stories of the mythos by various authors. There seems to be a common agreement that Yog-Sothoth visually manifests as a mass of glowing orbs, with eyes or tendrils in some versions, and in others, simply the orbs. So he's like a big pile of eyes, essentially.
He's like Hermaeus Mora in Elder Scrolls, who is the total Cthulhu knockoff. Because in Elder Scrolls, we did an episode about this, but the Ogma Infinium is the Elder Scrolls legally distinct Necronomicon.
There you go.
Yeah.
Again, they didn't even need to legally distinguish it. So they could have just said the Necronomicon. So that is the writers really trying to pull a fast one on you and be like, no, we were original and creative, when they weren't at all. Right?
Yeah.
So, it is heavily implied, if not outright stated, that Yog-Sothoth is omniscient, is locked outside the universe. It means he can know and see all of space-time at once, so there's no secret you can hide from Yog-Sothoth. Jamie, that thing you were doing right before the podcast? Yog-Sothoth saw it.
What? Uh-oh. When I ate the pickle?
You remember the pickles? You remember the pickles, Jamie?
Pickle. You told me not to finish the pickle. I finished the pickle.
You finished the pickle. And Yog-Sothoth saw that. Yog-Sothoth is called upon from time to time to assist mortals in performing occult deeds or rituals. The most notable instances of these events are recorded in the case of Charles Dexter Ward and the Dunwich Horror. One ritual involving Yog-Sothoth makes use of the, quote, essential salts of a deceased individual to resurrect them from the dead. The incantations involved with this are transcribed. I'm going to send you each a ritual to invoke, and I want you guys to try and read it. Who wants to go first?
I will.
Okay. So here's yours. It's in the Discord.
Oh, Christ. Okay, so there's just an Omega symbol first. I can't pronounce that.
I think you already did. It's pronounced Omega.
Okay, so Omega. Oh, Christ. Okay. So Omega Yanga Yog-Sothoth Ki-He-I Ulgeb Fi Throw Dog Ua.
Ua.
Shark bait Fi Throw Dog.
So that's to resurrect someone from the dead. So, Peter, who did you just resurrect from the dead?
I didn't have anybody in mind because I didn't know what that incantation was supposed to be.
It would have been Yog-Sothoth. No?
No, you used Yog-Sothoth's
powers. The guy who's going to do it.
To resurrect a deceased human.
Okay. Presumably. Plucking a dead person's soul from the past when they were still alive that he can still see, right?
I hope whoever it was, Peter, it wasn't a loved one, because Jamie's about to put him down. Jamie, here's the incantation.
Shit!
Here's the incantation to put him back in the dirt, okay? Could you give that one a
Og,
shot?
Yeah. Og Throd Eif Gebli'i Yog-Sothoth Ngang I Zro.
Oh, damn.
I got better
chills.
Than I did.
Yeah, way better. Okay, so Jamie, you're now on the same team as the Smiths, and you guys are winning in points.
Okay.
Fuck.
Peter, you're all by yourself now, buddy.
I'll get on the board eventually. I'll raise the dead. You watch me.
So in one case involving the town of Dunwich, Yog-Sothoth is known to have been summoned for the purposes of impregnating a human female, who then gave birth to two partially human children. The summoner was the husband father of the Whateley family, who was known to have stood on a hill in a circle of stones with the Necronomicon while shouting the name of Yog-Sothoth from the summit.
Don't want to poo-poo this guy's parade here, but there are way safer ways to get your lady pregnant. I'm just going to throw this one out there. Yeah.
This guy, not interested in him. So he was a daredevil. He'd done skydiving. He'd done bungee jumping. You know, he'd done base jumping. And he was like, what's next? I guess getting my wife and pregnant her with an Eldritch Horde and raising the child as if it were my own.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, you could just ride her bareback if you guys are into that sort of thing. It's like, nah, man. I'm not an adrenaline junkie anymore. I don't need to do that.
I mean, raising an Eldritch Horror would be a spike for adrenaline for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. When they leave the house when they're 18 million years old, it's so sad.
Okay, so that's Yog-Sothoth. Let's talk about Shub-Niggurath.
Okay.
Shub-Niggurath. The black goat of the woods with a thousand young, that's the most common of her epithets, first appeared in Lovecraft's revision story, The Last Test, published in 1928. She is a perverse fertility deity said to appear as an evil cloud-like entity. An enormous mass which extrudes black tentacles, slime-dripping mouths, and short, writhing goat legs. Small creatures are continually spat forth by the monstrosity, which are either consumed into the miasmatic form or escape to some monstrous life elsewhere.
Ew. Cool. Sounds like a mess, dude. You wouldn't want her on your carpet.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. really, you wouldn't want her, you know, anywhere near the Persian rugs, because that's not going to come out, you know? That miasma is just not going to come out.
Those mad Arab rugs, or whatever he would call them.
Yeah, yeah.
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 Yeah, yeah. Billy Miasma here with OxyClean.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get Eldritch exposure out of your rugs. No problem with OxyClean.
So Shub-Niggurath is the wife of the not to be named one and of Yog-Sothoth. So, double husbands. She birthed the twins Nug and Yeb. We'll get into who Nug and Yeb are.
Nug is so cute. It's like Nugget.
But what's important is that canonically, divorce or polygamy exists in the Lovecraft mythos because, I mean, she's married to two Eldritch Horrors, right?
Yeah, and both of those ideas are absolutely horrifying beyond my right?
Exactly.
Polyamory, get that shit away.
Yeah.
But I'm scared of losing her.
The most extensively worshipped of the outer gods. Anyone could summon Shub-Niggurath to any woodland at the time of the new moon. Jamie, what's a new moon look like?
It's like a moon, but younger.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty close.
Moon, but still legal. Don't worry, it's millions of years old.
Yeah. It's new. It's not that new.
It's when the moon is gone from the sky, correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's when there's no moon in the sky is called a new moon. So it's
the Earth is in the way.
When the night is darkest. The Earth is in the way. Is it when the Earth? Yeah, when the Earth is in the way. Must
yeah, our shadow. The sun, I don't think, has a shadow.
Yeah, it's when the sun gets in between us. Gets in between us and the moon, that's when the new
what
moon.
I was thinking something equally stupid, that the moon was on the other side of the Earth at the time, and I was like, no, that's just not a moon in the sky, you idiot.
That's what we normally call it. So she seems like the bastardized Arab king. She seems like a more bastardized kind of like pagan goddess from like Ireland or Scotland or something like that. Some sort of Celtic fertility monster that you worship when the moon is gone.
Yeah, so, I mean, essentially, she is a fertility monster. The most popular because maybe because she's the easiest to get a lay from, you know?
Who knows? I just thought something horrible, and thankfully my fiance does not listen to the show, but she's Irish, and I was like, that's my kind of Celtic fertility monster. In my own head.
Yeah, it's like the Cookie Monster, but they say baby, baby, baby instead of cookie, cookie, cookie.
Oh, okay.
Nom 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 nom.
Cookies just constantly pouring out of this giant writhing mass of tentacles. Yeah.
So the place from which she comes is unknown, but anybody can summon her. So you just all you need is a wing and a prayer and a moonless night, and you're able to summon Shub-Niggurath.
Can she appear at multiple summoning circles independently, or is she like Santa Claus where she hits everything in order?
I don't know if it's ever fully explained. I don't know if Santa Claus is ever fully explained to not be hitting places simultaneously. You know,
he should be arrested either way. I don't.
Yeah, it's breaking and entering. I mean, guy's a creep. Some do suspect that she comes from the court of Azathoth at the center of the universe. So some people think that you're summoning her directly from Sagittarius A-star.
Okay.
Shub-Niggurath is believed to have done a fair amount of mating and producing a fair amount of progeny. But without the time to go through each of them, I don't see a tremendous value in us diving into the names of them all. So the Thousand Young, which earned a place in her moniker, either come from mating with Hashtur or from pure fission. So she's called the Black Goat of the Woods with a Thousand Young. The Thousand Young are either from fucking another Eldritch Horror, Hashtur, or just
from within.
Or from pure fission, so just creating them from within her, like JV says.
Yeah. So if there's only ever 1,000 at once and she's constantly spewing them out, do you think like the last one dies every time the first one's born or something? Like,
yeah, her baby's like shark teeth or something else.
Yeah.
She's just shedding them like shark teeth. Well, it did specify that she spits them out constantly and some of them just like fall into her miasma at the bottom and she just consumes them again, like immediately. So.
Speaking of shark teeth, you guys know why your eyelashes never grow too long? It's because they fall out. Yeah.
You've never found an eyelash?
Well, I've done that, but I was like cleaning my hair the other day and I was like, do I have to condition my eyelashes? This is the same hair on my face that I'm not doing. And apparently websites say yes, I should be conditioning my eyelashes.
That is insane. Yeah. Why would you condition your eyelashes?
Who are you going to give butterfly kisses to?
It's
yeah. Yeah, they'll be too soft and wimpy to even feel them against my face, Jamie.
Yeah, imagine they drooped. Imagine you had to trim your eyelashes or else they fell down. Like, yeah.
You're like combing them after a shower. You got to like pass the comb up through them.
Gel them up like little spikes with frosted tips like Nick from the Backstreet Boys.
So I think frosted eyelashes are a thing, but I don't think we got to get into cosmetics because we're not the cosmetic boys.
Not yet.
No. Crunch at us, Maybelline. So the Dark Young, or the Thousand Young themselves, are horrifying, pitch-black monstrosities seemingly made of ropey tentacles. They stand as tall as a tree on a pair of stumpy, hoofed legs. A mass of tentacles protrudes from their trunks where a head would normally be, and puckering maws dripping with green goo cover their flanks. So that's what she's just like constantly spitting up and eating. Okay. The monsters roughly resemble... Sorry, go ahead.
Kind of like traditional devils, but they have tentacle heads instead of a goat man head.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the monsters roughly resemble trees in silhouette, the trunks being the short legs and the tops of the trees represented by the ropey branching bodies. A congregation of these abominations smells like an open grave. They usually dwell in woodlands wherever Shub-Niggurath's cult is active.
Okay.
So if you're walking in the woods and you see a tree with goat legs and tentacles for branches... you might be near a Shub-Niggurath cult. So maybe stop and say hi, you know?
You catch it on the wind, you're like, that smells like, anybody else smell that? That smells like an open grave. It's like, man, nobody knows what that smells like except you.
So. I'm a farm boy. You find corpses of small animals sometimes. Death has a very distinct smell. Oil. Death has a very distinct smell. It smells terrible. So let's talk about their children, Nug and Yeb. The children of Shub-Niggurath and Yogg-Sothoth, Nug and Yeb, as Jamie pleasantly put it, Nugget and Yeb, also known as the Twin Blasphemies, would become the first of the Great Old Ones. So we've been talking about Outer Gods, these beings that exist out in space. These are some of the first ones to come and just like chill on Earth that aren't Nyarlothep and just kind of like hang out here and don't really extend an influence out into the universe nearly as much as, because even Nyarlothep has the capacity to, you know, speak with Azathoth at the center of the Milky Way and you know, can probably exert an influence across great distances, maybe even can create copies of himself on other planets at the same time and have them all kind of running at once. Nug and Yeb don't have those abilities, seemingly. I mean, they have a lot of abilities, but we're not going to get into them today because we're not going to talk about the Great Old Ones, but this is kind of the start of the Great Old Ones. Okay. So they spawn many of their own progeny, brother and sister, brother and brother, sister and sister. I didn't look into it too much, so it's not super clear. I don't think it's super relevant for Eldritch Horrors. I don't know why they got a gender of them. No, they're siblings. They're Nyarlathotep's nibblings.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So they would go on to spawn many of their own progeny, such as Sharash-Ho, Yogash the Ghoul, Kaba the Serpent, Nush the Eternal, probably the most widely known of the Outer Gods, Cthulhu.
Okay.
Various cosmically significant entities featured in the Cthulhu mythos.
So he's like a second generation Earth monster. So his parents were born on Earth.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
He was born on Earth. Okay.
No, I don't. So I don't know if it's specified that Nug and Yeb were born on Earth or if they came to Earth at some point. I'm inclined to think he's a first. Cthulhu is a first generation.
Okay. Because I was confused there. When he was
the nameless
talking about, like, the actual rituals.
Yeah, the nameless myth and darkness produced Shub-Niggurath and Yogg-Sothoth,
right,
who are outer gods who exist in outer space. Yogg-Sothoth is actually bound outside of the material plane, so cannot even enter our dimension, our reality. He can only influence things from outside of it.
So they're second generation, so they get the culture a little better. They have to explain things to their parents,
yeah, exactly.
Like why the humans go to sleep at night and things like that.
Cthulhu doesn't have an accent, but he's bilingual, right? It's different.
So then Yogg-Sothoth and Shub-Niggurath produce Nug and Yeb, so presumably not on Earth.
Okay.
Because Shub-Niggurath lives at the court of Azathoth in the center of the black hole, at the center of the Milky Way galaxy, and Yogg-Sothoth lives outside of our reality, our space-time. So wherever they created Nug and Yeb, I don't know. I didn't look into it, but wherever they created Nug and Yeb...
culty stuff, like I was like, oh, she's constantly, there's fucking tentacled goat men falling out of her body. I thought that's like, oh, that's like in the forest somewhere in New England, like
so
in Vermont.
The tentacled goat men was who she produced with Hashtur, who is another Eldritch abomination who we're not going to go into. He's a great old one who kind of comes from her own lineage. It's weird. But then they produce the thousand young, or she produces them by fission.
Okay. I think Nug was conceived in a McDonald's bathroom.
Yeah.
On the new moon.
So that's kind of as far as we went with Lovecraft's writing specifically about the outer gods. I would obviously love to do another episode. This was another for me very much in my wheelhouse. I love like the literary ones. I love the ones without, you know, spoiling major plot points and things like that. It's just like talking about the aspects of it. So if you liked it, come join the Discord, loreboys.com/about. You can find the links there, or send us an email saying you liked it, or please leave us a review on whatever app you're using right now. Hey, using the app, are you driving? Just like pull up your phone while you're driving and just get to writing a review for us. You know, 5 stars, baby. Let us know you liked it, and I'll do another one. I can do another one on the Great Old Ones. I could do another one on some of the other circles, and again, I'll post a link. I want to have it ready to show you, you two boys, it while we were talking, but I didn't pull it up in time. So
okay. I forgot. Did you just call us YouTube boys?
No, YouTube boys.
Okay, I was about to make my next episode 10 minutes and 1 second long. Hit smash that like button. Hit the notification bell. Yeah. All that stuff.
Jamie jokes, but do smash that like button. Do hit the notification bell. On whatever podcast app you're using. I've been your host, Ethan Palmer. Thanks so much for listening. You can reach out to us at Loreboys on Twitter, twitch.tv/Loreboys. We have a ton of stuff. Best place to find our contact is loreboys.com/about. You can find me personally at Ethan the Dead Man. Feel free to throw me a follow, throw me some retweets, throw me some likes, you know, get me that dopamine. Jamie, where can we find you?
Loreboys.com/about, hop in that Discord. A lot of good discussion going on today. We're talking about Skyrim, talking about a bunch of other stuff. I haven't completely caught up yet, but if you want to talk to us directly and with other like-minded people who like the show, that's the best place to do it.
Mm-hmm. And Peter?
At Loreboys Podcast on Instagram. And then, of course, if you go to loreboys.com/about and click on the T Public link, you can buy some merch if you're into it, if you can. Or just come to the Discord and suggest more merch. A lot of people have been getting stuff shipped to them recently, mostly around the US, and keep telling me everything is good quality, which thank fucking God. So at least we've got that.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh yeah, here is a t-shirt. You wash it once and it just like completely comes unthreaded. Yeah. But apparently even the stickers are all good. So positive reviews on that. Yeah. And it's all made to order. So no pressure.
That's it. Yeah. If you guys want it, go get it. Cause it costs us nothing.
Yep.
You know, exactly. we get a small percentage of what TeePublic, you know, pays and then profits off of somehow. I don't know how business works. Jane, if anybody wants to get in touch with us via email, you can do it contact@loreboys.com. Jamie, I believe you have a couple of emails to read from our beloved listeners, the cult of Lore Boys.
I'll pull that up right now. So we've got two. The first one here is from Isaac. And the caption or the title is, Are Vikings Aliens? Mm. And Isaac says, Hello, dear boys of lore. As of now, self-proclaimed resident Swedish person. So he's trying to take it from, who's our other Swedish friend with the Dutch something or other?
Well, that
Dutch
was our
Peter.
That was our Dutch friend, Peter.
No, okay, so yeah, he's from. Never mind.
Yeah, where can I find him?
Our Dutch friend, Swedish Peter.
Okay. Yeah, he can confirm that Swedish babies do in fact cry with an accent, and okay, all good. Swedish people are aliens.
Oh, good to know. Good to know.
While we're on the topic of aliens and Swedes, I'd like to suggest an episode on the plentiful fake history of Viking lore, the Aesir, A-E-S-I-R. He thinks it could be a fun one, similar to the Dante stories and previously suggested Greek lore. Kind regards, your very own Swedish alien, or Isaac, whichever you prefer. Well, thank you, our Swedish alien, Isaac.
Yeah.
Thank you. I would love to do an episode like that. That sounds phenomenal.
Yeah.
Pulling up another one, just gonna ignore the one where we have an inheritance.
Did you guys hear? Somebody died and is leaving us all their money. It's incredible.
How many people? I don't realize I had so much family on the Ivory Coast. It's so nice.
So this one's from Chris Flaska, and the caption is "Love the show." He says, "Hello, I only just found the podcast and I love it. It really makes my work day easier. You guys have great humor and find some interesting lore to both discuss and make fun of. I just started the PT episode, and I have to say, I do hope you cover more horror games. I know it might be a bit boring after a while, but horror is my favorite genre of gaming. I know personally I'd like to cover some SCP stuff with some cool granular horror extra-dimensional stories, and I don't know about the other boys, but it's definitely in my plans."
You got to give me something more specific than general horror games, and I can look into it for sure.
Well, I'm glad you asked, because he would love to hear about Alien Isolation, System Shock, Darkwood, just all of Silent Hill. And we do have a Silent Hill episode.
We have a Silent Hill episode. We have a Silent Hill episode, and we have at least one Alien episode, but I think it was our fifth episode, so maybe that's one we could revisit.
Yeah.
Outlast, Atomic Heart. ... someday. So I guess that must be a long one.
Atomic Heart's not out yet, but that looks really fucking cool, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Condemned, all caps. Dino Crisis, which sounds...
Oh, fuck yeah.
That's horrifying.
Have you ever played Dino Crisis?
No.
Beyond Good and Evil and Burnout Paradise. But no, I haven't played Dino Crisis. What is
Burnout it? Paradise is probably the most genuinely horrifying, because car accidents definitely kill more people every year than slashers.
Or dinosaurs, for that matter.
Dino
Crisis is like Resident Evil 1 and 2. It's like an isometric horror game, but instead of zombies, it's raptors.
Oh, cool.
It's great.
I mean, the dinosaurs are kind of what are propelling our cars into each other, so I'd like to blame them for that.
Oh, technically true.
Hey.
I love that.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, everyone, for the emails.
More email, actually, yeah. I'm kidding about Burnout Paradise. Please don't do that one. But if you do, just play Guns N' Roses' song, Paradise City. That awful butt rock song is still stuck in my head thanks to the game's menu screen, and it just about sums up the entire game. I would love to hear more PC horror games, too, like the indie ones, but I don't know a lot of them. The PC I had when a kid was terrible. And he goes into a couple things he had this installed. I'd like to suggest, since you guys delved into I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, I think it'd be very interesting if you looked into the lore for the book that inspired my favorite horror movie, The Thing, a book called Who Goes There?
Oh, yeah.
I just watched The Thing for the first time, I want to say, a few weeks ago.
It's excellent, eh?
Maybe a month and a half ago, I quite enjoyed it. I feel like I knew I would. I had no idea it was based on a novella by John W. Campbell. But here, there you are, huh?
And he says, sorry for the long email. Love the show. I skipped over a couple sentences, so don't worry about the long email, but we're always happy to hear, like, send as much as you like, you know? We'll read it out, and we love to hear from you guys.
Yeah, no promises. We'll read what you write. We do try and monitor that. If you write to us about an inheritance that we don't actually have, we probably won't read it on air. Although I think Peter has read a fake spam email or two once or twice on air.
We've done it a couple times, yeah, because some of them are short enough, but the spam emails are always like, you think you wrote a long email? Or like or like Steven in New Jersey always apologizes for that shit.
Dumb friend. Yeah.
If you guys really want to read a fucking novella or a short story, just look in our spam folder. It's like it makes it more convincing because you get so exhausted. You're like, I'll send them $1,000.
Our password on the website so you guys can check our email whenever you like. So
yeah, exactly. Just look in our spam folder. Okay.
A quick note about that email. That email is copy-pasted from an Instagram message. So this guy actually contacted me on Instagram, so feel free to use the messaging system there. And if you want it read on air, send it in an email like this guy did.
Yeah. However you guys want to get in touch with us, do it, because we love hearing from you guys. Seriously though, if you want to help the show, the best thing you can do is leave us a review on whatever you're listening to. It just helps us find new viewers, and we're really not doing this for the money, because we don't make any money. We're doing it because we have fun and we love interacting with you guys. So the more reviews you guys leave, the more people that we can reach. If you don't want to leave a review because you're against that, it's against your religion, that's fine. You can always give us money. patreon.com/theloreboys. I know, and we know, that we haven't exactly delivered on all the things that we promised you guys. We're making steps towards fixing that. It's not going to happen right away. We're just lazy, busy boys who don't always get things done on time. If you don't trust Patreon because you don't think that we're going to give you what you guys paid for, well, Loreboys Premium, we always deliver on every single thing that we've ever promised for Loreboys Premium. So this is a special one. We're asking for a once-a-year payment of $420.69, okay?
Nice.
So Peter has been having a lot of babies, like an unusual amount of babies. A lot of them have, like, weird feet that seem to be, like...
Yeah.
Kind of like ungulate feet, you know? So
two or three dribbled out while we were recording.
By the magic of Hollywood, you guys didn't hear it, but there was a lot of, you know, flute sounds and this weird wailing, which we managed to cut out. But if you guys want one of his babies, because there's too many of them for his axolotls, it's making his axolotls nervous, we're giving them away. We're doing a special giveaway. So everybody who signs up to the yearly package of Loreboys Premium for $420.69, don't do the math to find out if it's cheaper or more expensive, I implore you. you guys will be entered in a draw to receive one of Pete's very cute little babies.
I've reabsorbed a couple that fell out during the recording, but I'm sure more will come.
Yeah, they don't seem to be stopping, if I'm being honest.
They come and go, they're independent.
It has your eyes, Pete, except without lids. It's beautiful.
And they're on the wrong part of its body.
Yeah. I don't know how to explain it, but its eyes look like they're upside down. and I suppose that would constitute a
Loreboys.
Oh. Hi, my name's Ethan. I moved the mic further away from my face to see if that helps with my sound.
My name is Peter. I'm going to make some chicken rice soup and a barbecued chicken. I realize I have defrosted poultry that will go bad.
Does chicken do that?
No, I think chicken lasts for a while. You just leave it in the sun.
Because chickens are like lobsters. They don't age, right? So why would the meat...
I don't think that's true.
Okay, we're doing a sound check. Okay.
All right.
Get that pickle out of your mouth.
I want the pickle.
Okay, put it down. Put it on the floor for now. You can finish it in a second. Spit it out of your mouth. Spit it out of your mouth, young man.
Put it in a napkin.
Yeah, put it in a napkin. You can finish it after the show. After the show, okay? It could be your reward for doing a good show.
I got more pickles for after the show.
See, this is the problem with not having a studio to record in during COVID times. We can't keep control of Jamie's pickle habits.
I know.
Okay, JB, hit us with a soundbite.
My name is James, and where does the rain really come from?
Clouds. Next question. Technically, water on the ground in the atmosphere, and then clouds. But
what do you think, Pete?
I was going to say exactly that. I just agreed with him when he said clouds.
Well, where do clouds come from?
Water on the ground?
Yeah, I also filled that out.
Yeah.
Where does the wind come from?
That hatches from eggs.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.